Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux the Rest of Us, episode 123. It's a show about Linux. Of course, we bring you all sorts of Linux goodness. Got some really, really good goodness this week. I am your host, Cody Cooper, and of course, I am joined, thank God, by my good friend, the Door Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin, a.k.a. the Linux Maven. How's it going, Door?
Going pretty good. I know I say a lot of times crazy, but it kind of really is going crazy. Had a birthday party this weekend for my youngest, just turning 5, and we went to Chuck E. Cheese's, and I'm right now starting to regain my sanity.
Oh, yeah. All sorts of foolishness happening in those places, that's for sure.
Yeah. Thankfully, we were literally like in as far away, close to a wall as we could possibly get to where we could actually kind of hear our own voices. But I'll say, you know, all the kids had a blast, you know, virtually every kid that showed up, and by that, I mean, every kid that showed up was really actually good, and they listened, and they had respect. So that made me feel good. And when we got home, my son opened up all of his presents, and by far, the number one thing he loved, if you haven't seen this yet, just go Google it. If you have kids, you've already seen it. It's called a bright light pillow. All it is a stupid, super soft, square, like couch-sized pillow that when you squeeze it, LEDs in it light up, and it looks like the pillow's glowing with like 5x5 rows of LEDs, and they turn different colors. And he just lays in bed, singing to himself at night, squeezing his pillow.
Weird.
Well, you know, he takes after me, so.
Well, there you go. And coincidentally, after a little bit of research, I just found out that if you go to podnuts.com/Amazon, you can pick up your own bright light pillow, as seen on TV, as heard on Podnuts, as heard on Linux, the rest of us. You can get your own right now. They're $24.29. Pretty decent reviews. Number one bestseller in kids' pillows.
Well, I don't know how you would give it a bad review, except you put batteries in and it doesn't work.
I wouldn't put it past the public to not get that right.
I'm not going to argue that.
You're right. Yeah. Okay. But it doesn't run Linux yet. But there are some things that run Linux, so we will talk about them. But if you are to go shop it on Amazon whatsoever, please don't go to Amazon. Please go to podnuts.com/Amazon. It'd be the exact same interface that you would go to if you just went straight to Amazon, but you'll also be helping out the network with purchases that you were going to make anyway. So we would appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep. Now, just because it's our notes are that accurate, we are putting a link to the notes. So the bright light pillow, just in case you were really interested or you really wanted to try to make your kid happy, you know, we try to help. This is a family here.
We go that extra mile, except I'm not going to walk the mile. I will drive it.
Yes. Yeah. I'll try to probably ride a scooter.
There you go.
Oh, I forgot to turn my heat off.
You want to wrap up and do it real quick?
Can you tell us a little bit about Sonar?
Certainly. Sonar is a wonderful Linux distribution made by our good friend Jonathan T. Nato, which is mainly based off Ubuntu, but he does have it available in some other spins, not only in GNOME 3, but LXDE, and I believe he also has a Cinnamon spin. The main benefit of this distribution is that it is geared toward accessibility. So for people with, for instance, Jonathan himself is blind. There are people with dyslexia where they have special fonts to help them read that, read a text inside of it. So if you have any sort of disability, this distro is geared toward you. And this will really only affect the live listeners, but he does have an Indiegogo campaign right now at Indiegogo.com/sonar. So if you would like to donate money toward helping this distribution become even more accessible, get even bigger, so where he can hire developers to work on that huge list of things that he wants to get done to make it even more accessible, please go there if you can. If not, go to theacf.co, and you can sign up for a one-time donation there, or something that I've done is I contribute every month. I think it little as $2. You can just have it automatically debited out of your account, and it goes toward a great cause. So please check out both of those and hit him up on Google Plus and ask him any questions that you would like. He's a great, great guy, a good friend of ours. He was on the recent episode of the show talking all about the distribution. So if you want more information, I would suggest you go check that out.
Yeah, I'm also going to put a link in the notes here. To be honest, a guy I consider to be one of my podcasting mentors, I'll say, and he doesn't know it, by the name of Chad Wallenberg, did an episode in the last, 2 days of Linux Base Mint. And on that episode, he basically had Jonathan on talking about Sonar, and they basically just talked about it. But Chad, very smart guy, very outgoing guy, and I believe he has family members where this kind of distribution can directly positively impact them. So he has something in this dance, I think is the right verbiage.
There you go.
So I think he did a really good job interviewing him. And, of course, Jonathan, always fun to talk to, and listen to, I'll say.
Yeah, and, of course, Linux Basement is a podcast that was off the air for about, I want to say, a year and a half, recently resurrected. Definitely a good show. I've listened to every single episode since they've come back. Listened to the Jonathan Nato and the Sonar episode last night, as a matter of fact, in my late night at work. Very, very good episode. I would check it out. And from what I've heard from a couple sources, Chad and I should get along for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, I'll say I believe the podcast came back on when his iPad finally died, so he didn't have an opportunity to hate freedom as much. So he decided to start podcasting again. I don't know if that's true. I believe he now might have a ailment that heavily restricts his consumption of fermented beverages.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll drink his then for him.
Exactly.
I'm that good of
teamwork.
A friend. That's
teamwork.
Right. Yep.
Okay. This is going to be really quick, basic. And here is the gist of the basic. Why hold back? Why not tell the truth? Listening to another podcast for some, dare I say, godforsaken reason, they tippy-toed around a topic that I just couldn't. What's wrong with you? I thought to myself. So, I'm here to fill a gap, a niche, a niche, a need, a desire, whatever, however you want to put it. There's an application out there that you can run native on Linux, Raspberry Pi, whatever, any kind of system like that, and it's called Piano Bar Fly. Piano Bar Fly is a command line interface to where you can play Pandora Radio. You can also, I believe, play Last FM through this. Okay, couple advantages you get. One, you get zero ads whatsoever.
Okay.
Two, you can log in with your account. You can play, manage, create your stations. It will actually show you what song is upcoming, unlike the other system. You can rate. You can thumbs up or thumbs down song. You can also have proxy support for listeners outside the U.S. built in. So our friends over the pond, this tool might be a fantastic tool for you to consume audio. Now for the kicker. It will, or it has the ability to, automatically categorize and save audio files.
Mm-hmm.
So if you listen to your station and you hear a song from Huey Lewis in the News, you'll open up your folder and you'll see a folder in this Piano Bar Fly called Huey Lewis in the News. You open that folder and there's the song that you heard.
You have to be
already properly ID3 tagged and named. So it's basically a command line interface and ripper for Pandora, and I believe Last.fm. Honestly, I heavily encourage anyone with limited bandwidth who wants to use Pandora to use a tool just like this, because their desktop or their web interface is very heavy. Very heavy. Uses a lot of extra unneeded bandwidth with adverts, in my personal humble opinion. And if somebody doesn't like the fact that I'm mentioning this, I don't care. Do you care?
I would suggest that they go buy a kite and then fly it.
Yeah, okay.
That's what I'd say.
Right, so I just wanted to mention that. I don't like it when listeners are left out in the lurch, I will say. And I just wanted to make sure people were aware of this, I'll say.
Well, I would say the moral objection would be, well, I shouldn't be ripping those. Those files are not mine. Whatever. Even if you don't use that portion of this piece of software, what I would suggest is, and I don't. This may be the one that Tracy was using at OLF, or it may have been another one, but I would say that for the gatherings in the hotel room where we're just hanging out, it was cool to be able to not only just have Pandora playing throughout the room, but being able to see that next track and then not have the ads. So if you're only utilizing it for that purpose, anything you can do to enhance your experience with these online music streaming services, because some of them do jam those ads down your throat, and I just roll my eyes. Like, for a couple of years, I paid for satellite radio, where you hear some ads, but not nearly as many as regular radio. But tonight, I was driving home with my father-in-law, and in the, I don't know, 3 or 4 minute trip, you know, over half of that time was all ads on the radio, and I'm just like, oh. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's only going to get worse on terrestrial radio as time goes on, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Because they need to make more money, and the only way they're going to do that is to push aside more of the content and sell more of that airtime.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay, this next thing I'm going to talk about, man, I don't know how to put it. It almost seemed to a lot of people like a very hollow announcement. We had a countdown clock for the last day on Ubuntu.com, and what it turned out to be was a announcement of Ubuntu Tablet OS or Ubuntu on tablets. They didn't announce any hardware. They just announced this OS that can be ran on tablets, and I didn't realize it. The tablet shown in all of their videos and previews is a Nexus 10 device.
Yep.
So we know just by that it is possible. Now, I believe it said in 5 days or such, when they release the Ubuntu for Phone images that you can blast on a Samsung Galaxy Nexus or a LG Nexus 4, they are also going to release Ubuntu tablet images for the Nexus 7 and the Nexus 10.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I think that is quote-unquote news is a lot of people said this was going to ship without an app store. Well, if you look at the image on their website, it has very clear image of Ubuntu Software Center. So it looks like it's going to ship with some kind of software center. Now, the only trickery thing is any application that is installable has to be very specifically built for ARM architecture, which basically means they would have to recompile every application for that processor type. Now, on desktops, we basically just have 32 and 64-bit processors, and that's the only difference is. On mobile devices, ARM architectures, there's actually a lot of different architectures. The question is how specifically geared towards that architecture is stuff going to be? Some things you don't have to have really hardcore specifically geared toward it, but higher end things probably are going to have to be very specifically geared towards it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well,
it's just more news of something happening. We just don't know exactly what until it actually happens.
Well, here's my thoughts on this. As far as you referencing it being a hollow announcement, Yes and no. I would say that, well, especially Dor and I talk all day, every day through Voxer, send each other messages all the time. And he sent me a message last night saying, hey, have you seen the countdown on Ubuntu.com for the tablet? And I was like, no. And then I looked at it and I was like, ooh. So initially when you think that, you think, oh, they're going to announce a tablet. So the initial inclination from everyone is like, ooh, we have this new device, right? Well, it was a hollow announcement for me for a couple seconds until I realized that this was exactly what they needed to do in order to sort of bring their plan together. And I would rather have them do this now, because from what I understand and what I've been reading, they're going to release the images for not only the tablet interface, but the phone interface at the same time, if not very close to each other, rather than months later. So that's not only going to give the developers a leg up to get these apps written and optimized for both interfaces immediately, but it's going to be able to have these images available for people who just want to test it out. Now, I'm not an Ubuntu fanboy, but I love seeing new sort of emerging interfaces, especially when I don't have to buy a whole new device for it. I really like the fact that with the phones, they're targeting a slightly older phone and then a new phone, both Nexus devices. Okay, but the fact of the matter is, you know, the Samsung Galaxy Nexus came out over a year ago. The Nexus 4 is kind of their new flagship phone model. So they're targeting two different areas. Now, I read the link in the notes, Dor. Where have you read specifically that they'd said it's going to be available for the Nexus 7 and the Nexus 10? Because I'm not seeing it here.
Sorry, it was on a CNET article that me and Martin were going back and forth with. Martin's the guy that does all of the notes for us.
Yes. Martin Obando. Martin, yeah. Rambo Obando. That's your nickname, Martin. It's Rambo.
That's a good name.
It is.
As long as we stay on his good side, that is.
We're gonna. I don't want to have him in meltdown holding an AK-47 wearing that red band headband. Anyway.
Right. Yeah, I'll find that link and I'll make sure it's in the notes. I understand what you're saying and I agree. It's A, I'm glad they did something versus they did nothing. Mm-hmm. So that's good. I like it for more advanced users. For end consumers, for end users who just are consumers, this is an utterly pointless announcement. Because until there's something on a shelf, to them it's just vaporware. They can't tell the difference between something that actually can happen or just vaporware. You know?
I would say yes and no. Well, okay, here's the thing. Let's say that they announced today a phone and a tablet. Okay, boom. You can order them from the website now, and then they're available in these five major retailers today. Go buy them. Those people aren't going to go out and buy them today anyway because they don't know what it is. It's going to take people like us to mess with this thing, to play with it. And it's good that we are able to use it on devices we may already have or that are at least accessible now rather than in the future to form the opinion, to go to our friends and family who might be coming up to us, hey, I'm thinking about buying X device, or it's time for me to upgrade or get this. What would you suggest I do? It's going to take us educating them to sort of open their mind and show them the options that are before them. So ultimately, I really, really like this. I'm completely behind it. And I am excited to use this interface on a tablet and on a phone. I'm so glad I did not buy my Nexus 4. I was going to buy a Nexus 4 just so I could try the phone version. But then now that this is announced, I already have two Nexus 7, so I don't even need to buy the phone I was going to plan on buying. And the Nexus 4 for me is just not good because I'm on Sprint. I can't even use it. I need to sign up for another contract. Yada, yada, yada. Big explanation. Don't have time for it. But no, I'm very excited about this because especially with the fact that on the tablet interface you can run the apps specifically built for the phone, and then also I can't remember the feature that they called it. It wasn't sidebarring. Sideshow, is that what it was called? No, it wasn't sideshow. That's not right. That's silly. Do you remember, Dor, what it was called?
I want to say slideshow, but I know that's not right either.
Anyway, they have a multitasking feature on the Ubuntu tablet interface where you're able to imagine like you're running an Ubuntu phone application written for the phone interface in a third of your screen. right? Let's say Skype. I think that's one of the things they used as a demonstration. You'd be Skyping someone on the third of the screen, and then on the other two-thirds to the left, you could be have like a word processing document open that's specifically built for the tablet interface.
There's side stage.
Side stage. Martin. Right, side stage. Thank you, Martin. Yeah, slideshow, that doesn't sound good at all. But yeah, I'm really, really hopeful. And yes, you are correct, that is a Nexus 10. Overall, pretty good tablet. Not nearly as powerful as the Nexus 7 as far as terms of processor, but overall bigger device. So at least it'll be available on those two, and those two devices are widely available. So if any of you at least want to get an idea of what this is going to be like in the future, having it on what is arguably like the epitome of a 10-inch tablet and a 7-inch tablet, I mean, it would be one thing if they were only available on like some low-end devices for some manufacturers we never heard of, you know what I mean, or just available to be put on anything, but they're picking some good hardware that is widely available that you would be able to flash this on and give it a try, which I think is exactly what the step they needed to do to not only get feedback, but to put it in the hands of the developers. So overall, the next step will be the announcement of the partnership with X hardware manufacturer to release a specific Ubuntu tablet and phone. So Right. They're making the steps, and I'm really excited to get my hands on this interface.
Well, yeah, and you have a device just sitting there patiently waiting for this. Mm-hmm. Thanks to Martin. OMGUbuntu.co.uk, I can say, has the link saying this will be available for download on Thursday. So 2 days from when we record, this is going to be available for download. I will say they were very on the ball. They literally, I think, had a posting saying the tablet like 40 seconds after it was on Ubuntu.com, which makes me kind of think that they might have had an inside track on this.
If they weren't refreshing, having a script ready to go to refresh their browser, then, having it in up in less than a minute is great, but I would say that if you want good Ubuntu news, omgubuntu.co.uk is a great site, and it's not just news, but they also give you tips and tricks, app reviews, things like that. So if you are using Ubuntu and you haven't been there, I would suggest you go give it a try, because that's how I found out about Ubuntu Tweak and quite a few other different things that I use when I have Ubuntu installed on a system. So go check that out. But it would behoove Canonical to partner with some of those larger sites and larger avenues of or news organizations when they want to make an announcement like this. So, yeah. Either way, they were on top of it or they knew something beforehand. So but I'm just glad that they were able to let us know somewhere along in the process. So, yeah, very, very excited.
Yeah, very cool stuff. This next one, because I like talking about Pi, is on Web Update, which is WEBUPD and the number 8.org. A lot of people out there have a Raspberry Pi, and what they've had to do is basically have multiple SD cards. They have one SD card to boot XBMC, one SD card to boot Fedora, I believe, is on the Pi, and another SD to boot Raspbian and all this multiple SD card stuff. Well, now it looks like you do not have to worry about that. There is a multi-boot tool for the Raspberry Pi called Berry Boot, which I think is a good name.
No, it is. It is.
And it definitely looks a little bit pretty. The Raspberry Pi version, which was tested, can automatically download and install the following Linux distribution: Debian Wheezy, Raspbian, XBMC, OpenElect, which I wanted to play with bad, Puppy, Rasp Razor, which is a Qt Razor desktop, which is uncommonly light, I'll say, Sugar, which is the educational type desktop, LTSP, which is Linux Terminal Server Project, Thin Client, very interesting stuff. Barry Terminal, Barry Web Server. So more than a couple distributions. I didn't know it could until I just read it. Actively download and install these multiple distributions on a single SD card. So it isn't only a multi-boot tool, it's the complete tool chain from beginning to end.
So almost like Goo Manager for Raspberry Pi distros.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that is cool. Now, I've multi-booted in the past, but for certain reasons, it's not my favorite option of testing out distros. And when you were first talking about this, I was like, okay. I mean, I have a bunch of SD cards laying around all just individually. But now that you have the ability to not only view but download them, because quite frankly, if you get a Raspberry Pi, I mean, unless you buy like one of those kits, you're given a board and you get it and you're like, great, I have one. Now what? Right? So to have the physical components to plug in and have fun with, but not only have something like this to go, hey, by the way, there are the X amount of distros you can use to give it a try and have one interface, not only download them, but switch between them on boot is awesome. This is an amazing tool.
Yeah. And if you're only spending $25, $35 on the computer, you can get a 64 gigabyte card. You know, you can splurge for that.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Although I will say, if you are going to get an SD card, go for at least a class 4, if not a class 10, which is the read-write speed. Because if you do a class 2, which is the lower end, I mean, you're just going to have... I mean, because, yeah, there is no internal drive for this. It's all off the SD card. So they are a little bit more. They're not ridiculously more. You're talking about paying two or three times, but there will be a slightly price increase. But traditionally, the high-end like DSLR cameras will use Class 10 SD cards. So you know, if you're a sports photographer, you're out there taking high-def photos out there on the football field, you know, you want to be able to get so many hundred photos per second. That's possible because of the Class 10 cards. Spend the extra money, especially since this is it's your hard drive for your Raspberry Pi. Spend the extra money, get that Class 10, or just a little bit lower if you have to. But the Class 10 will be way worth it in my mind.
Yeah, like a year or so ago, there was, I don't want to say a drastic, but a much more drastic price difference between a Class 2 or Class 3 or Class 4 and the Class 10. Now, I'd say that price difference is... literally, it's like the difference between 3-day shipping and 4-day shipping. You know what I mean? It isn't much of a difference.
Right, right. And just like with anything else, you know, especially with storage media, go with a brand you trust. Go to podence.com/Amazon. Read the reviews. Because when it comes to certain components, you can go on the cheap. You know what I mean? Like USB cables, you know, go get them wherever you can for, you know, 17 cents for every foot or whatever. But when you're talking about components that are your experience relies on not only their speed but their reliability, do yourself a favor, spend the extra money, and just get what you can afford to make your experience that much better.
Absolutely. Yep. This next one I want to bring up, it's actually in relation, because now I have two things I want to test. Okay.
Okay.
Rateo, a name we've mentioned in the past. Mm-hmm. I honestly have never met anyone out there who understands more about the audio stack on Linux. How sound becomes sound. How sound gets recorded. How sound gets manipulated. Everything about sound. Well, he also knows a fair amount about video, too, I'll say. John Miller sent me a link on how to do a different way of recording my desktop in Linux. And I found this way today. So I'm going to try both of them out and see what's best. This is a command called avconv. A-V-C-O-N-V. And there's a little string in here that you just put in your terminal and... it isn't hard, it isn't long, it isn't insane. You basically copy-paste. And he says in here, because he's doing the X11 grab, he's able to record audio, I believe. And that was one of the things that I need to have desktop recording visually and the audio to be very synced up.
Mm-hmm.
Because to try to sync an audio cue and a visual cue into the exact same split second is a little bit hard. It's much easier if it's already synced up for me.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to try to play with this one and the one I got from John Miller here in the next week or two and basically put them head to head and see which one comes out first, because I do believe using FFmpeg, which I believe AVCon is using, and FFmpeg, the command I got from John Miller, is a way to get much higher quality, much higher frame rate screen recording than my standard ways of doing it.
Very cool. And then, of course, we've used similar tools as far as a screen capture in the past. And I'm not saying me. I'm saying Podnuts in general, to help create some of our video series. And you guys might have projects or be posting like how-to videos on YouTube or just things for your family or friends. So to be able to have these extra tools to be able to make that experience that much better, it's going to be worth your while in the long run. So yeah, definitely, Dor. We should report back on this in the next week or two after you get done testing them, because I'm very curious to see the results you get from these, because I have something that I want to do soon, which I want to do screencasts from my machine in order to record video through another project, which we're about to talk about later in the show. But yeah, please, please definitely keep us abreast as to how this turns out for you.
Very cool, very cool. This next one is kind of related. Okay. There's a article over at ossdoc.com, which I found myself stumbling across, I'll say, a little bit more often here as of late. I've been using they call it K-A-D-E-N Live. It's actually KDE.
Mm-hmm.
KDE and Live.
Yep. You're right.
No. Even the article says KAD. Okay.
You're wrong.
That's what I think too. KDN Live is a, hold on, non-destructive linear video editor. I believe it's video. No, non-linear.
Non-destructive non-linear.
Non-linear. Okay.
Damn, there you go. Close.
Okay. And I've had pretty good success with it. I will say I've had points in time in the past when I tried to use it like months ago, where it literally just was crash happy, like super ridiculous crash happy. I have not experienced it this time whatsoever, but I saw this article and it made me think, well, it could be happening to other people. Okay. There's apparently a known bug that if you're running certain versions of Ubuntu, Debian, Fedora, Red Hat, or SUSE, that the application's very, very crashy. And they basically show you how you can upgrade to the quote-unquote non-stable version, which, ironically enough, the stable version is unstable, and the unstable version is stable. I don't know how the hell that happens, but it does.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to know, because yeah, I was about to say KDN Live is one of the video editors that I want to try using for this project. And who was it? The OSGUI guy, the OSGUI guy off YouTube.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He uses KDN Live, and he's given talks on KDN Live before. But I really like what he does in that, which would be great for your video series, or any video series really. Is he does like the picture-in-picture.
Yep.
Where he's like the little, you know, thing down in the right hand corner where it's him talking to you, but then the rest of it is his desktop. So yeah, very, very, very good tool. And it's good to know that if there are some incompatibilities with certain distros or certain versions of distros, that there is a workaround for them. So this is some very valuable information.
Yeah, I'll say I first fell upon that guy's videos when I was trying to learn how to use Remaster Sys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the first time I watched it, I did not realize the video quality and the fact that his picture was there in the bottom corner.
Mm-hmm.
I just realized how good of a video it was and how it explained to me everything I needed to know about the tool. And then after watching it like a second or third time, I thought to myself, this guy's doing this on Linux and this looks fantastic. How's he doing this? You know? So that's when I did a little bit of research, and yeah, he was using KDN Live. I will say we just had an email on the last day from a guy who's really talking highly about OpenShot. I do plan on giving OpenShot a fair shake, but I have another KDN Live link. Over at flossmanuals.net. I honestly encourage people to subscribe to the RSS feed on flossmanuals.net because it's, I don't want to say randomly, but it's occasionally updated with new manuals. And this is a very plain English, end-user-focused manual of how to... Well, first it tells you what is KDN Live, what is video tools, what does this guide cover, how do you get KDN Live on your desktop, working with a single video file, and goes through a lot of different steps of editing tracks, putting in effects, doing multi-track, adding in separate audio, step by step by step by step by step. This is the kind of guide I instantaneously, when I hit the site, I went to, I think it was Firefox Down the Mall, and I literally downloaded this whole manual, quote-unquote, as a PDF and as an EPUB, and I put it on my own cloud, just so I got it for future use, because I don't read a lot, but when I do, it has a habit of being stuff from flossmanuals.net.
There you go. I'm making that internet meme with your head on it right now.
Oh, jeez.
Bruce Patterson will appreciate it. Not Bruce Patterson. Sure. No, what am I thinking? Never mind.
Well, Bruce is a nice guy.
No. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he'd appreciate anything good coming his way, but I misheard you. That's all.
Gotcha. Okay. I got another one that, for some reason, I think other shows either don't know about yet, or they just don't feel like it's necessary to talk about. I think a lot of listeners to this would at least be interested in this and like to know that it exists. We all understand tethering on our phone to our laptop.
Oh, yes.
And how sometimes we want to get access away from, you know, our house, and they want it. Some of our users have the absolute inverse happen, where they want to turn their laptop or a device, a computer, into an access point. And Linux Mint is the only distribution I know that makes this super, insanely, stupid easy, where you basically open up your network connections, and right there's a button that basically says, turn my computer into an access point, and you click it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's in Mint. It's right in the Mint networking interface. That's the only distro I know that has it built into the interface. For some reason, I haven't seen it anyplace else. Well, as it turns out, anyone can put it on basically any Linux computer with a application called HostAPD. I'm sorry, HostAPD. With this application, basically, you can create either a virtual, I believe, or a real access point. So if you have only one wireless interface in your device and you're connecting wirelessly to your internet, you basically need to make sure you have a second wireless interface to use as the access point. And you can basically turn your laptop into like a bridge. I found this to be very interesting. Only certain Wi-Fi cards will support it. Not every Wi-Fi card will support it. I will say that, and here's the reason why, okay? Some Android users have seen this issue, and it might drive you absolutely insane like it does me.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Some phones with some operating systems on it can only turn into a wireless access point via infrastructure mode. Some have to use ad hoc mode. This is the same kind of principles that apply. Not every laptop wireless NIC can be in infrastructure mode. This looks like this only supports infrastructure mode. So if your card only supports ad hoc mode, this probably will not work for you. In Windows, when you hit internet connection sharing, it always by default pushes it as ad hoc mode. There's a lot of stuff you cannot do in ad hoc mode. And now, more than ever, there are certain devices that will not even acknowledge the existence of an ad hoc mode network.
Right.
I.e. the default Chrome OS, i.e. Android tablets. I don't know about iPads because I don't have one. So I'm not sure at that, but that's what I believe is the limitation to this. So not all wireless devices can be turned into access points using this application, using these steps.
Yeah, years ago, what was it? What device was it? The Sony PlayStation Portable, the PSP. It could only, I want to say it could only, So when you're doing device-to-device, like wireless gaming, in the case of that, if you had a game that you could do multiplayer wireless, but you'd have to have two PSPs, PSP per person, and then copy the game per person, it had to be ad hoc versus infrastructure. And that was the first time I was introduced to the difference. And I had never really investigated it up until recently when you and I got our Chromebooks and we and you told me that, in fact, it wouldn't log on to one versus the other. Whereas the standard wireless tether through a rooted Android device, it only broadcasts it in which one door?
It only will do it in infrastructure mode.
Okay, but the Chromebook and the Chrome OS requires ad hoc. Is that correct?
Yes. Now, okay. It technically doesn't. The hardware will support it because I install Ubuntu on my Chromebook and it connects to ad hoc networks just fine and infrastructure mode.
Okay. So it's within Chrome OS then, whatever wireless.
Yeah, Chrome OS will only connect to infrastructure mode.
Okay. So as much as we didn't want to do it, we had to bite the bullet and purchase Fox 5 Pro.
No.
Well, I paid my hard-earned money for it. Dor used a Google Play card, gift card for Christmas.
Well,
so
he's
lying to himself.
No.
You are. You're a dirty fibber.
No. I'm going to complain and ask for my money back because I'm using Clockwork Mod Tether on my Android device now.
Oh.
It's not wireless-based. It's USB-based. And I'm 99.99999999% sure that will not work with the default Chrome OS. So as long as I'm on the Ubuntu OS, I can use this Clockwork Mod Tether instead of a Foxfy or any other wireless tethering mode.
Very cool. I'm actually flashing my phone tonight because from my HTC Evo 4G LTE, which is a mouthful, I just got the new the 4.2.2 update was available on the 17th, so like 2 days ago. So I'm throwing that on there tonight. So yeah, I'll be interested to try the actual. I've never tried a wired tether before. I've never done that. Do you see a boost in performance?
Hell no.
No. Okay.
No. Right. I thought I would. I see no performance at all increase. And I will say just a real quick Android deviation. It is the hardware, in a sense, on Android doesn't matter. Whether it's ad hoc or infrastructure, it's whatever drivers are included with that ROM. My default stock OS on my Droid X2 will only do ad hoc. CM10 will only do ad hoc. Eclipse, which I had installed, did infrastructure or ad hoc. So it's whatever drivers are included with that ROM directly determine what kind of tethering you can do. Now, with the USB, it doesn't matter. And when you download Clockwork Mod Tether and you hit the question mark and you hit install to computer, three icons pop up. A Windows icon, a Mac icon, and a Linux Penguin. You click that Linux Penguin, you download a tar gzip. Three commands later, you're tethering.
Very cool.
After you install some dependencies, but that's always the case.
Right. Well, it doesn't sound too complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Yeah, it's, dude, and ultimately it comes down to what I've always advocated it. Always investigate your options. Don't fall prey to just being comfortable with the one tool that you think works the best for you. There might be something out there that works better, or at least experience some of the other alternatives so that way you know exactly how reliable the one that you really like is versus what else is out there.
Right, right. Now I got a quick little bit of news. Honestly, I think 2 years ago or so, Knucklehead Tech told me about a website, and it's more a service than a website, and it's called GitDeb and PlayDeb. Well, they found it very hard to keep their servers updated and their web pages updated, and one time they had a database crash, and they basically determined this is too much work. We're just giving up. Mm. We're done. We're over. Count us down. We're down for the pin. Whatever. TKO. Well, I believe they were afraid to make Ven Stone over at LenoxGamecast.com mad.
Uh-oh.
So they decided to start back up. Here's the thing. Not everybody wants or needs Steam-level gaming. Just putting that out there, okay? PlayDeb is a bunch of games, and it's almost like a web-based Ubuntu Software Center where you can browse applications, but you also add a repository to your system, and you can either install via Synaptic, Ubuntu Software Center, or even the web interface. You can click install, and it will install a game for you. They also have GitDeb. GitDeb is like a, the word I'm looking for is like handpicked. They have handpicked applications in certain fields. So it's not a complete listing of applications, but it's curated. It's a curated list of games, or games and applications, just like it isn't every game. It's just a curated list. I liked this service a lot because it made it just simple and easy to find what you're looking for and install it. And you didn't have to worry about a lot of, dare I say, crap apps and apps of, let's say, lesser quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, having services like this is very good, especially when you're just starting out. Because, for instance, if you just go to like the Ubuntu Software Center and you're searching for whatever kind of application or game, I mean, or anywhere, I mean, Windows, Mac, whatever, you're given so many options. Whereas if you have something like this suggested to you, where it's more condensed and concentrated, where they've been able to handpick and sort of inject them into their distribution, it's going to be a little more reliable right off the bat and give you a better experience. But at the same time, still, do yourself a favor, find out what else is out there. But like I said, for the people just starting out, or for the people who are just starting to look for a specific game or a piece of software in an area which they might not be familiar with, something like PlayDeb would be very cool.
Yeah, and I'll say, like, here's a for instance. If you look at racing games, there's seriously two games listed. They just basically just picked out what they thought was the best of the best. Especially for new users, I think this could be a very helpful source, because I'll say on a recording, some users don't want lots of choice. This site, in my opinion, does a decent job of giving you enough choice to wet your whistle, to get you interested, to give you a good idea of what's out there, but it also gives you what they consider to be only quality games, I'll say.
And it never hurts to get some good feedback, especially when you're stepping into sort of a new environment. So definitely check it out.
I know, but I got to get off this website.
Are we about to take an hour-long deviation into, ooh, and then there's this game, and then there's this game?
Exactly. Okay, this next one's a real quickie. Basically, I am acquiring, I guess, ownership of podnuts.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's no secret.
There's a cake in the mail on the way to you to congratulate you, by the way.
Okay, as long as it's chocolate cake, because my son loves chocolate cake.
It might not be all chocolate when it gets there.
Oh, okay. Well, and Steve has his own hosting account, and I wanted to get my own hosting account. I didn't want to ask him for his credentials. He has a lot of personal stuff. Well, I'm sure he has a lot of personal stuff, because everybody has extra stuff on their domain account. So I went and got my own hosting account, and I requested a domain transfer. And I thought to myself, I want to know if Linux itself can notify me of a domain transfer before the people doing the domain transfer. I mean, I want to know right now when it's done, kind of thing. And I found this link over at cybercity.biz. I don't know why the hell it's on that website, but it is.
Okay.
And it's basically a Unix Linux shell script for monitoring system network with ping command, and has the ability to email when the IP address changes. So basically we can put in podnuts.com as the host that we are querying in this. We can put a count in. We put like 10 in, because you want 10 fails in a row, not just one. Subject of an email, and the to of the email, and then you basically just run this command. You can basically put it in a cron task. This is why it's count one. You put it in a cron, you have it run every 10 minutes or whatever, and then when it fails, it sends the email. Well, I found this when I was at work on my Chromebook, and I thought, number one, A, I cannot install this on a work computer. No. You know, having my work computer on a schedule ping something that's not work-related, not cool. But I needed this done. I wanted this done. I wanted this done bad. Well, podnuts.com/lounge stepped up and basically saved my sanity. The guy I want to thank is named Chuck, C-H-U-Q. He's been there forever. Really nice guy. And what he did, and I'm going to add these into the notes. He sent me two files. One, I want to say, was a shell script, and the other one is a Python file. It's cleaner. It's better code than this. He basically took this code from this website as a base, and he tweaked upon it, i.e. GPL. What quote-unquote free software is supposed to be. So Chuck basically fixed it, made it prettier, and he's going to add a couple features into this to notify people when IP addresses change. And this could be anything. This could be your actual web hosting domain. It could be your own external IP address on your home network. It could be your Roku box. It could be anything you want to monitor. So I definitely want to publicly thank Chuck, because he put this on. And I got the email from his server saying my IP address like 10 minutes before I got the email from HostGator saying the domain transfer was complete.
See,
so I felt good about that.
I got to tell you, I get a little jealous every time I hear about cron jobs and automated scripts, because I have never utilized one before for anything. And I know you can do it for such a variety of reasons. And that's one of the things. And basically, and I've talked about this before on a previous show, in 2013, every year moving forward, I just want to step up my Linux game. My overall computing experience, I just want to improve it. And Dor can speak to this, and many guys have before too. Whenever you can automate something, do it. Because it's just taking that much more work off you. It's creating a much more streamlined workflow. And you're literally doing a little bit of work now and then a lot of work later that you're not doing. It's being done for you, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The command line is where the power is at, and cron is automated power, I'll say.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, I'm very, very looking forward to setting up some of those for myself. If you guys are using any cron jobs day-to-day, no matter what, if it's for, mainly I would say personal use, send us an email to podcast@elixirrestofus.com. Because I would like to know what our listeners are using and what they're using them for. Because who knows? If it's useful enough, I'll fold it into my day-to-day, and then we can always read it on the show, and we can benefit the entire community and listenership. So send them in. I'd love to hear them.
Absolutely. I'll say I don't use cron enough. I use cron only, like, quote-unquote, on an on-demand basis. When I need something right now, I use it, then I forget about it. That's the problem with cron stuff. It's like learning how to cook something. If you don't cook it again in a couple weeks, it kind of falls off and you forget about it. That's kind of my unfortunate experience with cron, is if I do something in cron and I'm successful, I'm yeah. And then a couple weeks later, I'm like,
what were those
steps? I know
steps?
I did something. Yeah.
How does this go?
Yeah, I just completely
damn
forget.
It, I forgot. Yeah. I hear you.
And I had another thing I wanted to bring up from another listener. This is from Ryan over at Mad Monkey Media Hosting. Mad Monkey Media and Design Hosting. Really nice guy. Martin, I believe it was Martin. It might not have been Martin. I think it was Martin. Martin asked, in Linux, what Twitter applications do you guys use? Me being a dork, first thing I pipe up is, well, I use Kupfer to do my postings. You can tie Kupfer in with a Twitter account and say hotkey combination post to Twitter is the first thing, and the second box is the actual content of the posting. So you can post right from Kupfer. I said, now to read my postings, I've typically used Gwibber. And Gwibber is good. It's not bad. Okay, that's the first thing I got throughout there. It's not bad at all. Well, Ryan pulled, like from out of his sleeve, something I've never heard before. It's called Turpial, T-U-R-P-I-A-L. And it's made in Venezuela, and we all know Venezuelans make good stuff, right?
Of course, I read that on the internet.
Exactly.
And I heard it on the internet just now from you.
Right, there you go. So it has to be true. This is a, I'll say, unusual Twitter client in the fact that this is a, what I believe, completely Python-coded application. I'm pretty sure. I'm kind of sure. I think so.
I'm excited because I didn't know you could post to Twitter from Kupfer.
Oh, yeah. Kupfer can do everything.
Dude, man. There are, I'm just going to say, there are some awesome videos on YouTube. Like, I use Kupfer day-to-day, most days on the machines I do have it on. And I'm just, man, this is so great. But with too many things, and if you guys fall prey to this action or this way of thinking too, break yourself out of it. I mostly use the software I use day-to-day at its most base level. Because, you know, if you think about, like, high-end video editors or audio editors or web browsers, you're like, yeah, there's all these options, but I just need to do A, B, and C, and you do that. Well, with Kupfer, I mainly just use it as a launcher. Because it's like, I'm not going to grab my mouse. I got two hands on my keyboard. I can do this. But there's so many things you can do with Kupfer. So explore your options, not only with Kupfer, but other pieces of software you use day-to-day. Make yourself a more well-rounded user. And, yeah, I've been getting, some of you guys have been following me on Twitter, and I haven't posted nothing on Twitter in a long time. In fact, if you look at my last 10 Twitter posts, they're all from years ago when I was doing stand-up. So they're all completely inappropriate for any sort of technological knowledge base inquiries whatsoever. So, yeah, follow me on Twitter. I'll start to use Kupfer for Twitter or this Python tool. Have you got to try it yet?
I literally loaded it on the Acer Chromebook earlier tonight. Utterly solid, utterly quick, utterly light and simple. And it just does what it does. It shows you your Twitter feed. You can follow. You can unfollow. You can post. You can upload media. You can search. You can do everything I think you need to do in a Twitter client. And it's not insanely heavy. That's a big thing I like about it.
When I was using Twitter more actively, I used TweetDeck because I was also very interested in having a nice interface where I could read all the people I was following, their posts in a nice, nicely displayed format. And that always worked for me. But as far as having something thin and light that you could use just for posting, yeah, I'll definitely give this a try.
All right, and I'll just throw this out there really quick. Every 2 years when I feel like paying Twitter any mind, I keep coming across this one tool. Okay, it's called Twitter Fall, TwitterFall. What this is a web interface to basically watch tweets, filter tweets all live. It's actually a pretty good tool to where on the search, on the side, you can do search results. So we can type in Linux. You hit add.
Wow.
You can change the color of it very easily. There's little color bars over here. We can make it purple if we want. Hit save, and then we activate it by hitting the checkbox. And this will basically give us a cascading list of tweets. Now, the first time you go there, it seems it takes a couple seconds. If you log in with your Twitter account, you get much better results and a little bit more options. You can even filter by geolocation. You can do just regular, and you can add your custom list. You can empty the queue, hide the panels, clear the page. See, I have two now. Two tweets come in. Anytime you put your mouse over top it, it freezes it. So you don't have to worry about stuff getting out of hand. If you go here to the side, it gives you all your choices of DM, follow, reply, retweet, you can actually create a custom link or a bookmark to your Twitter Fall settings. So from any computer, you just share that link, and voila, you have all your settings back again.
Very cool.
Yeah, I just like this because it's a web interface, and you don't have to worry about installing anything. You just share that bookmark, and voila, you're back to ground one, you know, very easily, very quickly. So that's just my little stupid Twitter tip of the week.
No, you know what? And even though I mentioned this earlier in the show, I haven't been utilizing Twitter nearly as much lately, mainly because I'm just on G+ now. But there are still people who use it actively day to day, and if we can, if we have listeners that are using it day to day, we might as well be posting content there in order to reach a wider audience. So why not? Yeah, I cannot wait to. Luckily, I have direct access to all these links because I have the dock at the door and I share. But you have access to the show notes too if you go to podnotes.com and just go to the links to the rest of us tab and then click on each individual show. Check these out. If you aren't utilizing Twitter as much as you think you could be, but you want to, you might as well create yourself an environment that's more suited to your needs with whatever you're using it for. So we've given you several options on how to make your experience better, so check them out.
Yeah, I'll say I like Twitter Fall is, to me, a great way to do discovery, to find people on Twitter. You can use it as a complete Twitter client. I just found it to be very good to find people, because here's the other tip. Hypothetically, I put in Podnuts. It will show me, I think, for the past 24 hours, who else said Podnuts. So it isn't just from now into the future. It will also jump into the past in the very beginning, which I liked. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, this next one, I'm not going to lie, I didn't read nothing because I don't read. But over at Fast Company, which is, if you look at Alexa ranking, it's a pretty popular website. MIT builds a open source platform for your body. Okay. MIT builds a open source platform for your body. I'll just say I was listening to another show where some guy was clamoring on about how open source is stupid and it isn't successful and nobody uses it. MIT, let's just say one of the highest educational sources for education in the known world.
A very reliable education institution, educational institution when it comes to at least paying attention to what they're doing, because they pump out some great stuff.
Right. Well, what it looks like they did, they're working on, a lot of it looks like a assistive technology. Dare I say, like a $6 million man kind of thing. To basically use computers and technology to further what people can do, and it looks like possibly to help people with disabilities to get more done with computers. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it in an open fashion. They're not doing it in close license type of fashion. They're doing it in open fashion. That's the real whole thing. Open source, like I kind of said before, is like a myth. It's like a description. It's like a vague veil. It's not the actual body of content. The body of content is the GPL license. And that's what mm-hmm. MIT looks like it's doing. I'm not going to say GPL, but open license technology in basically like healthcare and the health industry.
Yeah, when you, and I will speak positively about Fast Company. It's a good magazine. I used to actually subscribe to the physical subscription, just get the magazines in the mail. It's geared toward a lot of like emerging technology, marketing sort of. I almost it can almost be like a cousin to Lifehacker. If you guys have ever been there, it's a lot of those same type of articles, but Lifehacker, in my opinion, is much better. But I do get their newsletter every day, and there are some, I mean, especially with things like this, you know, MIT builds an open source platform for your body. That's just a title for an article that's supposed to make you go, what? What is it? And then click and then read.
Yeah.
If you read further into it, you realize that they're using open source technology to make tools on how to make how to monitor not only your physical wellness but potentially lose weight, do a bunch of different things. So
no wonder I didn't read it.
Right? Yeah. Well, you were probably eating something while you were starting to read it, and your body was like, "No, I love this Philly cheesesteak more. Forget it." But yeah, overall, Fast Company. I mean, you wade through some of the BS, just like it's a lot of stuff you probably get day to day in your inbox, and they do come up with some gems, some very very cool. I love their productivity stuff. Some of their productivity stuff is interviews with professionals where they really just kind of cut to the chase and go, "Look, this is what works for me," and it's some of the best advice I've ever heard as far as becoming more productive. Which I don't care how productive you are, you can always be better. So check them out if you can. Check out this article. I'm looking over it right now, and there's some very, very innovative stuff they're doing. They have an 11-day healthcare hackathon is basically what they're saying it is, in order to pull the students together to create a solution to the broken healthcare industry, which I can attest to. There's a lot of fragmentation, a lot of thought on how to fix certain items, and ultimately there has to be a better way because a lot of it is pretty bad.
Yeah, absolutely. And having companies like this step up, not companies, institutions step up like this, I think is, I don't want to say pioneering, but leading by example.
You know? Right. Especially with open source software, to be able to go, "Hey, by the way, this doesn't cost anything, and here's what we came up with. Why don't you implement this instead? Because this is our because these are our findings, and this is what we did in 11 days."
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, definitely a cool article. Check it out. And I'll tell you right now, I need to lose some weight. I was I'm trying to buy a new office chair. I wanted a drafting stool, because right now I use a standing desk. I'm standing up right now in front of my desk talking to you guys. And I wanted a drafting stool where I could still use this desk or a modified version of it and still be at this height. But unfortunately, my current weight exceeds the weight limit for most of these chairs. So I'm going to lower the desk back to the normal height. So speaking of that, for personal inquiry, if you guys have an office chair that you bought online that you really, really love, hopefully, or potentially on Amazon, if you guys bought an office chair on Amazon or at least available on Amazon, please hit me up, Cody at podcast, or excuse me, send me an email at to Cody@podness.com, and I would love to hear your feedback about your office chair.
Gotcha, gotcha. I need a new chair, but, you know, I'm lazy.
You do need a new chair.
I know. This thing will randomly just start sinking on me kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Okay, this next link, I will say, it's not for the beginner. It's not for the advanced person. It's for someone beginning to make that transition into advancedom, something like that. It's basically, okay, once you get a little bit familiar with Linux-based systems, you'll know you have files on your computer that contain essentially web addresses for your repository. On a Debian-based systems, this is in /etc/app/sources.list. And if you open that file, you'll see nothing but web addresses, some FTP addresses, and it's basically those are where those software repositories reside. And when you add a PPA or you add another one, it's basically adding to that list. It does it a little bit differently, but it basically adds to that list. Well, when you're on Debian, Debian is essentially a rolling distribution in the sense you could install a Debian version from 8 years ago and upgrade it to what is new today without doing a reinstall, with just doing upgrades.
Really?
Kernel upgrades, yeah. Kernel upgrades, software upgrades, security upgrades, all of it. And it will essentially be the exact same thing as if you installed it from today.
Would that, I mean, I like that fact that you can have that upgrade path from such an older distro, but is this giving you the ability to do it time-effective manner to where it would be worthwhile? I mean, obviously, no one's going to go install an 8-year-old distro and then try to upgrade it legitimately, like just every day-to-day. I mean, to see if it works, sure. Or if you had an old machine and you want to upgrade, sure. But is it, I mean, it's going to take longer, obviously. But did this article indicate as far as how long it might have taken? Because do you go from A to B, or do you have to go through each of a revision? Does that make sense?
Yeah, you basically have to go through each revision. The real reason why it does that is you have a public-facing web server. Okay. And it's running, let's say, Debian 3. And voila, tomorrow Debian 4 comes out. You can upgrade, you can do all of the upgrades while it's up and running and live. And then you basically just reboot the computer, and when you come back up, you're on the new distribution. Doing that is much quicker than taking the whole device down and installing a whole new operating system, because you can do all the upgrades while it's still up and running. So that's the real reason why, the real benefit to a rolling distribution. So you could have a server you put up 8 years ago and never have to reinstall the operating system. You just keep going with the software, keep upgrading as long as the software keeps being supported, and you know it's going to work fine. Now, I'll say, when you start to get a little deep into Debian, you start to hit either walls or barriers, I'll say, that you have to overcome. It's a learning curve in Debian itself, where if you're running the stable version, but I want to install Firefox 19 or whatever, and that's mm-hmm. in testing, I want to install that from testing, but I'm running stable, so how do I do it? So you need to learn about the repositories and how they work. And if you want to, using this page over at, this was a weird URL if I'm not mistaken, debgen.simplylinux.ch. You can basically go to that website and on the fly create your custom sources.list file. You can pick what country you want these updates to come from. You can pick what is the major version. Do you want old stable, the current stable, testing, unstable, experimental, 32 or 64 bits. And then you can select your sources. Do you only want the main? Do you want the contrib packages? Do you want the non-free? And by non-free, they don't mean price encumbered, but patent or license encumbered, like Flash. Security updates or just updates. And do you want to have the availability to download source files as well? And you basically just go through, make your choices, and then you check whatever ones that you want. And then basically on the right, you also have third-party repos. This is the big kicker that you can add on to it, like Mozilla Team,
nice.
Multimedia Team, Opera Team, Google Chrome. So there's definitely more stuff you can add to this than in your standard Debian install. And then when you're done, you basically just hit generate sources list, and then it gives you what you put into your sources.list file. Now, again, this is not for the noob. This is for somebody wanting to advance and to use actual Debian. I found this to be a really cool, in my eyes, eye-opening tool on some of the customizations you can do to the repository selection itself.
Yep, and that's something, much like what I was speaking to earlier, something I want to get more into as this year goes on and just further into the future, because I think it's just the next step as far as your evolution as a Linux user. Because trying out distros is fine. Okay, you might as well see what's out there. But being able to at least understand or get a hold of certain repos, at least understand what they are and what the differences might be, because some will come stock, some won't.
Right.
Some will come stock with many that you don't need that you can cut loose, and some aren't available that you need to add in manually through the terminal, right? I have so many things I want to do this year. But yeah, that is definitely one of them. Because it's one thing to understand the interface, but it's one more thing to understand what's going on behind the curtain, essentially.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's just going to make you, it's going to skyrocket your level of understanding and comprehension and your overall experience, in my opinion. And I haven't even reached that yet, but I've heard you talk about it. And several others, and especially for those of you who have like used Slackware or built like a system through Arch, it just your understanding of Linux is just night and day beyond anybody else. So I'm really, really looking forward to it. And something like this, which I can already just like use straight Debian and then use it's like a half step toward that goal. So I'm very, very interested in utilizing that.
Yeah, this to me is a great stepping stone.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Very cool.
Very cool. Do you have a link?
Yep. I just threw this in the chat. This is from an email, which I won't reference because he sent in two. Well, I'll reference it. I'll talk to you about it later. But anyway, Steam on Linux is officially launched. Not the beta, but the official launch of Steam on Linux is done. It's launched. And to commemorate the launch of this, there is a huge sale of all the games, if not most of them, that are available on Steam through Linux. We provided a link that will be available in the show notes, but you're seeing games anywhere from 50 to 90% off. And I'm talking good titles, like And Yet It Moves, Trine 2, Amnesia, Half-Life, Counter-Strike Source, Killing Floor, Postal 2, Droid Assault, Frozen Synapse, and many, many others. Faster Than Light, Titan Attacks. And if you, Serious Sam 3, if you guys haven't played, if you guys like puzzle games, I gotta say this because I played it on Android, and I work in a retail video game environment, so I'm completely subjected to many different games every day. And as such, and with my ADD, it takes a very, very, it takes something unique and interesting to really hold my attention, especially when it comes to gaming, because I have a huge library of games. I can sit down and play anything I want anytime, basically, but I don't because I'm like, whatever. The game Splice is a puzzle game that when I sat down and played it for the first time, not only was it so visually beautiful, but it was, I love puzzle games. And this is a puzzle game where you're basically dissecting bacteria to get it to spread. But you have to do so in such a way to where it makes sense within the puzzle environment in this game. And not only was the presentation of each of these levels just amazingly beautiful, but it really gets you to think in such a way that I've never had to think in a puzzle game before. And it's very awesome. But anyway, it's 50% off right now. You only pay $4.99 for it if you're getting it for Steam on Linux. And on Android, I think it's only like $3 or $4, if that. But on a tablet interface, it's fantastic. I'm going to buy this right after the show because I cannot wait to see it on a much bigger screen because it is just an awesome, awesome game. Something that you can sit down and play for like 5 minutes versus some of the more popular games you have to devote hours to. So if you guys are looking, if you're already running Linux and you were excited about Steam, now is the time to jump on it and get some of these titles, snatch them up for, I mean, most of these are under $5. Have you bought any of these yet, Dor?
Honestly, I haven't bought any of them, but I will say the prices are frigging nominal. They're so cheap, yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yep. Yeah, if you guys were waiting for this to happen, now is the time to jump on this. I mean, just insane deals on a lot of really good games. I mean, a lot of these are well-known that I'm just looking at them, and trust me, I know the titles that you should know for PC gaming, and a lot of these are really, really good. I'm talking like you could take $10, $20, and come away with a lot of games that will last you a long, long while.
Right, and the thing I'll throw out there that I completely forgot, Knucklehead Tech and Eric Salce reminded me, in the past, we've pushed Humble Bundles. If you purchased any of those Humble Bundles, odds are some of the things you bought had Steam keys with them.
Yep.
To where you can play those games now on Linux. Even though they didn't exist when you bought that Humble Bundle, you got that Steam token or ticket or credential or whatever. You can now, quote-unquote, cash it in and play it on Linux.
I can speak to that because I bought, in one of the bundles, I bought one of my favorite video games of all time, Super Meat Boy. And I was able to download that through Steam on Linux onto one of my laptops and play it. And it's cool to think that you already, because if you guys aren't familiar with Humble Bundle, definitely check them out. Fantastic cause, and you get a lot of good games and or books and CDs for a small amount of money going toward a good cause. But to look at the back catalog, because I bought most of them, so to think that I already own a lot of these games, like I need to go back through and, I already bought that. I don't need to buy it again. And I can download it right on my Linux system through Steam and play it. It's quite, quite cool. So definitely, yeah, good point there, Dor. Definitely check that out.
Yeah, and these prices, there's no reason for you not to buy even just a couple games. Honestly, I have a 4-year-old kid. I should buy like 10 of these games just so in a couple years he'll have really cool games to play. I mean,
definitely.
You know, and they have now, I believe, 60 titles available on Linux. They still don't have Left 4 Dead 2, I believe.
And trust me, as soon as that becomes available, you're going to have to come up with another co-host temporarily. We're going to have to get Rambo on here, Martin Rambo Obando, a temporary co-host, because I'm not going to be available.
Right. Well, it might be both Martin and the guy's name I can never pronounce.
Ryan Ridenour?
No, Saiji.
Oh, Corin or Sagey. Sage,
yeah. Yeah, Martin and Sage will host for a couple weeks.
There you go. Yeah. You and I will be like, we're shooting zombies.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, I'm so sick. And slash training for the future inevitability of the dead rising from the ground.
Yeah.
Speaking of that,
I'm preparing my stuff for Nelf.
Yeah, right. This is completely unrelated, although I'm going to say it is related because I would bet that the guy used Linux to make this happen. Did you hear about the, I want to say it was Montana or Idaho, I'm pretty sure, but their emergency broadcast system being hacked.
Yeah.
That warned people over the radio and television that dead were rising from the ground.
Well, and here's the thing. It was during their nightly news. So I believe it was at 11 p.m. at night on their local news station when a commercial came on.
As it would be.
Tone came on. This is a test of the emergency broadcast system. And then a voice came on and said, how did it say it? Like, there are reports of dead rising from the grave. Do not go outside. Do not panic.
Right.
It's like, oh.
Yeah, stay indoors. They'll be there soon.
Whatever.
Dude, yeah. All I'm saying is, if you watch The Walking Dead, it's a possibility. Why not be ready for it? Get yourself some Left 4 Dead 2, but wait until it comes on Steam for Linux. Because it's got to come soon. First-person shooter, zombie game, dude, well, you've never felt more terrified and exhilarated at the same time.
Well, here's the thing. That was the one they kept showing the screenshots of when they were developing Steam for Linux. So well, I thought it was going to be the first one.
Well, I agree with you. But from a marketing standpoint, they might as well splatter a lot of these other popular games first, because there's a variety of ways to go about it. Left 4 Dead, the franchise, is owned by Valve, the company that makes Steam. So there's no reason why they can't say tomorrow, boom, it's done, it's on there, right?
Right.
But it's one of the more fast-paced, intensive graphical games that they've made, I would say, more along lines of like Portal, because it's within the last 3 or 4 years that they made that, especially since that's like their flagship current franchise, right? So that's probably the most advanced graphical and fast-paced game that they have in their catalog right now. So it might just be that they haven't got all the kinks worked out yet, or it's that big announcement that's going to come in the next 90 days. All I'm saying is when it happens, dude, you and I, we're going to be side-by-side, shotgun and assault rifle, taking him down.
Double tap.
There you go. Back of the head. Very cool. All right, moving on. Before we hit emails, I just wanted to throw out something there. Everybody who went to OLF had a great time. Okay, I will say that because you guys have heard it. Speaking of OLF, I will mention that they are still looking for a volunteer coordinator. So if you have any experience managing people, or if you want to help me as a co-volunteer coordinator, if you're planning on going to OLF this year, 2013, please email news@ohiolinux.org or me personally at cody@podness.com, and we will make that happen. But heading into next month, Northeast GNU Linux Fest, or NELF, as it's called, we're going to have a variety of podcasters there. Myself, Dore, Jonathan Nato, Russ Winter, the Techie Geek, will be there. And I'm all about, because you got to realize there's only several, not much, I wouldn't even say several, I would say a few times a year that we meet in person. And what a great opportunity to create some exclusive content for our listeners, in my opinion. So what I would like to do is have you guys email us at podcast@linuxthestofus.com a list of questions that you would like answered. Because what I would like to do, and this is going to be time permitting, but we can make it happen, especially if we have the content up front that we know that you guys want. For instance, if Russ and I were to sit down for 30 minutes and sort of interview each other, which we've never done, like Dore and I have talked to each other, but Dore and I haven't asked each other certain questions. If there's things that you want to know about us, whether it's related to Linux, tech, whatever, just that you would like to listen to, send in those questions to us, and we will do our darndest to make it happen. Because we recorded some things at OLF, but I'll tell you, OLF 2013, we're going to be full force. So this, heading into NELF 2013, will sort of be our test run. If you guys want this content, we will make it happen. But you need to let us know what you want to make it happen. So do your duty. Right now I'm asking for questions, interview questions that you would like for individual podcasters. I know for a fact it's going to be at least me, Dor, Jonathan, and Russ. Do you know off the bat if there's anyone else known in our community that's going to be there, Dor?
Honestly, I know there's going to be at least two more, but I can't remember their names right now.
Okay. Well, it's still, you know, 3-4 weeks away, so we have plenty of updates, but we might as well throw this out there now because we're going to be hanging out. You know, there's going to be after-hours stuff. There's going to be times where we can sit and do mobile stuff. Dor and I already have some ideas, which we'll get into soon. But please send in those questions, or at least ideas for maybe content you might want to hear from a Linux Fest. Send in those questions to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com, and we will start this ball rolling. I appreciate it.
Very cool stuff. Yes, I'm looking forward to the Fest.
All I'm saying is I need a vacation, and what a better way to spend it in Boston at Harvard University on St. Patrick's Day? I told my boss where I was going, and she's like, "You're going to Boston?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm going to speak at Harvard." And she's like, "What?" And she demanded more details, and I told her what I was doing, and she's like, "That's pretty impressive." I was like, "Yep." Anyway, let's get this stuff done.
Yeah, good times. And we do have an email we got from Jonathan, correct?
Yes, sir. We have quite a few emails. We were on hiatus last week, so we're going to bang through some emails here. Jonathan Nato, of course, we spoke about him earlier in the show, the ACF.co creator of the Sonar distribution, great friend of the show. He wrote in, "Hey, guys, listening to you talk about the Chromebook made me think that this is the year of the Linux desktop. Granted, it's not what people pictured when it was said, but it looks like the Chromebook could take over. It is running a stripped-down version of Ubuntu. This is interesting. Also, if you can run GNU Linux on these, then why buy a Windows computer to install GNU Linux? You can just put it on one of these, and no Microsoft task is being paid." Jonathan.
Yeah, I'll say no Microsoft tax, and in some cases, more importantly, you're not adding to the Microsoft numbers of how many, quote-unquote, installs they have, how much sales they have. That was another, after he said that, side perk of me buying this. I felt a little bit better.
Yep. And I got to tell you, Dor, and I've spoken to this before and so have you. Man, I don't know about you, but I still have yet to install Kubuntu on mine. But I'm still carrying this thing around with me every single day. It's my main device. I use it probably not more than my phone, but more than my tablets, more than my laptop, my desktop. It's just an amazing machine.
Well, and it isn't heavy.
No.
Yeah. The keyboard's nice. I bang on that thing and punch out. That's now my main email rig. That's what it's now converted to.
It's my productivity machine. It's a little tunnel that makes me focus on getting things done.
Right. And I'm trying to sound dumb, but I get a lot of emails, okay? I get a lot of emails.
Yep.
I do everything I can to actually answer everyone, and once in a while I forget to say thanks for listening to the show, thanks for the email, but I still mean that. It is such a perfect, in my mind, task device. Not an entertainment device. This shouldn't be the device you think you can install Steam on and play games with. But this is definitely a productivity device. I've never really had a productivity device. This is the first time I've actually had one, so I feel really good about it. Because I'm actually getting stuff done on it. I mean, tonight, as soon as we got home, I went upstairs, I helped with the kids, here's dinner, here's food, here, eat some more food. And then I booted up the Chromebook, sat with them at the table while they ate, and I pulled up Google Docs, and I started to get the notes ready. It's cumbersome to do that on a tablet or on a phone, for me at least, the way that we do it. I have to have an actual device, and I can't go over across the room on the desktop computer and do it, because then I'll spend the whole time turning around and looking at them, saying, what are you doing? Hey, it's just too hard. I need to be sitting right there and doing it, and it's so light, I don't mind just carrying it right around. And the keyboard, honestly, I cannot speak highly enough about the keyboard. I hate a lot of keyboards. I like this keyboard a lot.
It's a very comfortable chiclet-style keyboard that is not too cramped as what you might expect from an 11.6-inch laptop. But, yeah, it's spacious. The only sacrifice you're seeing is the arrow keys, in my opinion. They're little half arrow keys, but yeah, whatever. But yeah, I mean, you're talking the regular QWERTY style, you know, letters, numbers. Perfect. They're spaced just as properly. In fact, I held it up next to another Chiclet keyboard that I have, and the exact same spacing as far as the regular keys that you would utilize day to day for just about everything else. So, right. Yeah, very, very happy with the device. Could not speak more highly about it. In fact, one of my a guy I'm working with at a store I'm currently helping at, he saw mine, and he was just smitten. He was just like, wait a minute, how much does this thing cost? And I explained to him, you can't install Windows apps on it. You can't do your normal computer stuff. Here's what you can do. I laid it out for him. He got his tax money, went and bought one the next day, brought it in like a badge of honor. Just like, hey, I got one of these. Right. You know, very, very happy. So... a device that suits quite a few, a large variety of different users. And if you haven't heard us talk about it on previous episodes, please go back and listen to our comprehensive review of that device because it's quite, quite extensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. I'm going to use it as my main rig when I go to NELF to do my presentation, and I've built most confidence it's going to work great.
Oh, me too. Me too. Yeah, it's a perfect travel laptop too, especially considering what you might need to do while you're out and about. Very, very worthwhile.
Right.
All right, we got some more emails here. Let's see here. Mark Owens writes in, couldn't you just make multiple partitions, 32 gigabytes or less? Or would the camera have issues with more than one partition on the SD card? This is in reference to the XFAT thing that we were talking about recently, not only on this show, but on My Hard Drive Die with Scott Moulton.
Yeah. I personally would be willing to bet a month's worth of lunches this would not work. I'm going to guess every camera out there will only see the first partition on an SD card. But I also believe Scott said there was some kind of limitation on the card itself to where if you tried to format them FAT32 or other types, they would not be stable, I'll say. I'm going to ask Scott on the next My Hard Drive Die to see if this is plausible, if this is doable, but I'm going to right now gamble and say best case scenario, you could do one smaller than 32 gigabyte partition, which if you're doing FAT32, the biggest you can do, I believe, is 20 gigs. So you can do one 20 gig partition, and that's it. And then you cannot store anything larger than 2 gigabytes on that partition. So it has limitations by default in the FAT32 format system. And if you have a 64 gig card, you want to take advantage of 64 gigs.
Right, right. And yeah, I thought exactly what you did, Dor. I have yet to test it because I have a nice Canon DSLR, so I will definitely give it a try. But yeah, much like what you said, I believe it's there isn't an internal or proprietary viewer within the camera's operating system to view different partitions. The only deviation I've seen from that is a buddy of mine had a JVC camcorder. It was a consumer level, I would say probably like a mid-range camera, like $300-$400 that he was using for some particular video projects. But it had two SD slots, one of them dedicated to video, one of them dedicated to photo. So in my experience, yeah, it's, I mean, if I wouldn't put it past some of the higher end manufacturers like Canon or Nikon to come up with one of the more like high end cameras that might be able to do that. But then again, if they are hardware wise allowing you to view different partitions on your SD card to circumvent this, then it's somewhat self defeating because they have to pay those fees to Microsoft in order to have that be a possibility. on their cameras. So they're almost kind of screwing themselves over by doing that, or potentially leaving themselves open for some sort of scrutiny. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, hey, man, basically, Mark, when it comes down to it, if you can find a way to do it, do it. Just like with anything, if you can, one of the things I love to do is to use not only software, but devices for non-intended purposes that makes me get more usefulness out of them. So if you find a way to do it, let us know. I'm getting ready to get this camera prepped for my trip to Nelf. So if I can do it, well, I'll let you guys know. If you hear anything, let us know, and we'll let the listeners know.
Very cool indeed.
Very cool. All right. So on to the next email. Chris Chamley writes, Cody, I love the show. I also carry an Acer Chromebook and wanted to hear what must-have apps/extensions you're using, Chris. I got to tell you, Chris, up until your email, up until I read this, I didn't even think about getting Chromebook extensions because I was just using Chrome for Chrome and then using Google Docs and utilizing media from the SD card because I keep a couple movies on hand just to kind of play in the background. I'll listen to while I'm answering emails or booking guests for shows. So I actually went on to the web interface to look at extensions, and there's a large variety of them. I had used a lot of extensions in Firefox in the past, but the only, previous to owning the Chromebook, the only Chrome extension I'd ever used was, well, there's a to-do one, or excuse me, there's an extension for their for Google Tasks, which I use because that's an awesome tool. And I use Evernote, of course, and then Bitly. But other than those three, I hadn't really investigated it. But after looking at what they have available, especially to be able to communicate it to that friend of mine, which I just told you recently bought the Chromebook, with between him buying that and asking questions and your email, I've investigated it to such a degree, and I'm finding so many different things that you can utilize. Some of them, there's an online audio-video conversion tool extension for Chrome, which I thought was quite amazing. If you think about the advanced things you can do just in the browser, it's very cool. But I wanted to throw this to Dor. Dor, are there any extensions for Chrome that you're using as you mumble under your breath?
Yeah, I'll put a list. I'll get an actual list and I'll put it in the show. And I'm just going to highlight the ones that I actually use.
So go ahead. Sorry.
There's one called App Jump, which is like a quick button in your toolbar, so you can quickly launch any other extension or app. I use a Google Music button right in my toolbar, so I don't have to have a full window open just for Google Music. I use a service called Do Share, which will allow me to schedule Google Plus postings or just do Google Plus postings. I use a PDF PowerPoint viewer by Google. I use Firebug Lite to do HTML debugging. I have to have FlashBlock.
Oh, yes.
When I'm tethered, I have to be able to restrict Flash videos from loading until I want them to load. I use the goo.gl URL shortener, not bit.ly. Shamil Shamazel, six, half dozen of another thing. Yeah, all the same thing.
I've never heard of that.
It's the official quote-unquote Google one, which you can basically tie into your account. So you have permanent history and statistical information on that link. Bitly is probably technically better.
It's goo.gle.com or
no, it's just goo.gl.
I'll have to look at that. That's very cool.
Yeah, it works good. I have a Google plus one button. So anytime I'm on any page, I'll just click that and I can plus one the page itself and post about it in a little pop-up window. Have to have Google Chrome to phone or I will go nuts. I have a Google Plus notification button up in my bar. Invisible Hand is maybe one of my favorite extensions of all times. Anytime you're looking at a product, it will actively search some insane number, like the top 80 online sources for products, and compare them in the background and tell you where's the cheapest one. Love that app.
Oh, wow.
Pocket Gitpocket, formerly known as Read It Later. The note thing is called Quick Note. It's an offline note-taking app. I do like that app. That was the one that came suggested or, I think, pre-installed with the Chromebook. And there's one called called Secure Shell, which is a terminal emulator and SSH client in your browser window.
Yes.
So I had to have that on my Chromebook itself because I need terminal emulator just to feel comfy.
Gotta have it.
Yeah, and there's technically like 10 more I've got.
Very cool. Well, you know what? Why don't we commit to doing, and we've been saying we're going to do this, but with the more stuff that we're finding and the more stuff that's coming out, it wouldn't hurt to put this off, but why don't we, in a couple weeks, come up with like maybe like an updated review or at least an update for our how we're utilizing our Chromebooks now versus 45 days ago?
Cool.
Okay. Definitely. All right, moving on right along. Our good friend Ryan Rittenauer writes, and I say our good friend because I thought we were good friends, but he wrote me an email giving me crap about me apparently whining about not getting an email at my Cody@podnuts.com/email, not slash, just email address. So Ryan Rittenauer wrote to me, "So you can stop whining that you haven't got one. Keep up the great work on the show. Regards, Ryan." Yeah, thanks, Ryan, for that backhanded comment via email. First of all, I wasn't whining. I don't care how you guys get a hold of me. I'm just saying that it was available. I wasn't letting you know it was available as an option, and I thought, hey, I'll throw out something there fun for the listeners, you know, for you guys who actually listen to the show. And you attacked me a little bit. I'm mostly kidding when I say this, but I'm still a little wounded. But to completely sidestep and diffuse your sideways attempt to poke fun at me, for everyone who in fact did contact me in the last 14 days via my Cody@podnuts.com/email address, I am, after the show, donating $5 for each of you to the Sonar campaign for Jonathan Nato. There were at least 10 of you, so I'm donating at least that much money. I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm just saying, hey, you know what? That's a good way to say these people care. I care. Here's this money. Go do good with it. So, but Ryan, I'm not donating $5 for you. I'm not doing that. I'm just kidding. I will. I totally will. And thank you for your other contributions, Ryan. You do give us some good content.
Oh, yeah. Good guy.
Our good friend, 2012 Father of the Year winner, Ash Anderson, writes in, "Dudes, I just told my boss about System 76. He had never heard of them, but he just ordered the Bonobo Extreme with maxed out specs and hardware. He spent $3,500, but is rocking 32 gigs of RAM, an i7 processor, 400 gig SSD, and a 1 terabyte hard drive, etc. I wanted to say things. I wanted to say thanks for talking about System 76 on the show. It helped me today with my boss. Personally, I run a Lenovo ThinkPad T420 and love it. Thanks. Have a great day, guys. Ash."
Wow. That's all I got to say. Yeah. That is,
dude,
a box.
That's a box, but that's also someone who has way too much money to just be like, yeah. First of all, System 76, I've had mostly positive experiences with them. I'm having some issues with my laptop that I bought almost a year ago. They're working me through it, so I'll keep you guys up to date on how they're treating me, which as of right now, very good, considering my one-year warranty is about to expire. They're treating me very, very good. $3,500 to 32 gigs of RAM. All I'm saying is, if you have more than 4 gigs of RAM, by God, you better be using it for what you're supposed to be using it for, whether it be gaming, video editing. But if you're only utilizing like 3 gigs and you have 32 sitting in your machine, dude, what are you spending that money for? Other than just the fact that you can pet the machine and go, yeah, I could do this, but I don't. A 400 gig SSD? Wow. I'm not going to judge someone else's technological purchase Because I will say, Endor, you might have done this, other people do this. Whatever you could say to yourself to justify to buy whatever you want to buy when it comes to tech, just do it.
Yeah.
And I got an email about this, and hopefully it was in jest. It may have been serious, but I'm not sure. It was either last episode or the episode before. I was talking about beating a cougar to death with a Lenovo ThinkPad. Let me say right off the bat that that was an only in self-defense scenario. Like, I'm not going to go out in the jungle with a Lenovo ThinkPad and hunting for cougars, like, intentionally just trying to, you know, go hunt them down with and beat them to death with a laptop. I'm just saying that if one of them, I live near a wooded area. Let's say I'm walking out with my son, we're going to the park, and there's a cougar that was to come toward us. If I'm holding a laptop in my bag and I want to use it to defend myself, it better be a Lenovo ThinkPad. And, man, yeah, the ThinkPad 4, the T420, Ash, I am totally jealous. Because that is the right form factor, the right feel. Dude, I've held one in my hands. They are wonderful machines. So, if you guys are thinking about buying a name brand laptop, definitely check out Lenovo. They got some good options for you.
Yeah. I'll say, if you like ports, you got to go Lenovo. Or if you love the little eraser thingy mouse pointer, you have to go Lenovo. And honestly, I like both.
That thing is weird until you use it for the first time and you're just like, why wouldn't everyone have this?
Right, because you get hooked on it.
Dude, you do, because it's so precise after you get using it for a while, like a trackball. Like, this thing is foreign.
Yeah.
And you use it for 5 minutes, you're like, why haven't I used this before?
There was some open source project a while back. They took essentially a pin, I think it was a pin, and they put a little thing on top of the pin, and they stuck it into that, and it was so sensitive, they used it as a wind speed sensor.
What?
Yeah. I thought that was cool.
It's insane.
Well,
they check that out.
They wanted to. The guy said this thing's really sensitive, and the guy said, "Well, how sensitive is it?" And the other guy said, "It's really sensitive. We can use it to test wind." The other guy said, "No." He said, "Yes, we can," and he did it.
Wow, that's very cool. When it comes to portable devices nowadays, I mean, I can. If I were to buy a lap, like if I was given, I don't know, $1,400. Tomorrow, and I was told, you need to go to a store and buy a laptop. Chances are I'll buy a Lenovo because of their build quality, because of some of their options they have. A lot of their laptops offer USB 3, which some of the other manufacturers, for whatever reason, are currently dragging their feet and only offering them in like their higher end, like $2,000 plus models. So, Microsoft tax aside, yeah, I love Lenovo stuff. So definitely check them out.
Very cool.
All right, moving along. Ross Schneider writes in, "Hello, Cody. I wanted to take a moment and maybe be the first person to send you a message at your exclusive PodNuts email address." Ross, you were not. "I just wanted to thank you and Steve Dorr for bringing such great Linux content to your fans in every episode. Several months ago, I started listening to different podcasts of interest, and Linux was on the list. I dabbled in Linux originally about 8 years ago, but my initial excitement for an alternative to Windows led to disappointment with what I found to be a convoluted experience trying to navigate in, at the time, I think was Ubuntu 5.04. Now, as I have been recently trying several different distros in VirtualBox, I am very impressed in the evolution of Linux desktop experience and hope it only gets better and finally gives Windows some much-needed competition. PodNuts is a great resource for all things tech, and you have become an integral part. Of course, Dorr now being at the helm of the network just solidifies PodNuts as another perfect example of how rewarding the internet experience can be in the right hands. Thank you again, Ross Schneider, a.k.a. Sleepless Dad."
Thank you.
When I read emails like that, dude, it just makes me feel warm inside. And yes, PodNuts being in the hands of Dorr, very good hands, being steered in some very, very good directions. And it's if you like the network where it is right now, trust me, it's only going to get it better very, very soon.
Yeah, I'm not going to. Well, I guess I'm going to sound dumb. I'm just having fun, and it just so happens when I'm talking to certain people, I hit record and I publish it and people want to listen.
There you go. It's got to be fun. It's got to be. If it's not fun, if at a certain point it's not fun, you have to reassess. But yeah, right now I'm having a blast. I wouldn't be spending this much time with him if I didn't think he was an awesome dude and helping me learn, helping you guys learn. So, yeah. Thank you, Dor, for doing what you do for Podnuts and for the listeners. I really do appreciate that.
No problem, man.
All right. So Rick Crouch writes in. He says, "Hey, guys, my latest project has involved editing some HD videos. In the past, I've used Adobe Premiere on Windows. My version is supposed to edit HD video, so that's what I was planning on using. I captured the video just fine, and it would play in Windows Media Player, but Premiere, it appeared as a slideshow. There was no way I was going to be able to edit this project like that. Just for grins, I decided to try OpenShot in Linux. Now, OpenShot is pretty bare bones as video editors go, but for this project, I was pretty much just trimming clips and splicing them together. Thankfully, OpenShot worked like a champ. I was not only able to edit the videos, but I was also able to quickly render them into both HD and DVD versions. Again, it's pretty bare bones, so users won't have the rich full feature set of Premiere or Final Cut Pro, but it is quite effective for simple projects like this. Thank goodness for Linux. Rick Crouch."
Very cool indeed.
Very cool. Yeah, I gotta say, especially when it comes to editing video, there are some extra hoops you need to jump through. Specifically, if you're importing video from a camera or from, let's say, a tape from a camera using like one of those like a tape deck. Like it's almost like a VCR, but it'll take like DV cam tapes or whatever tapes that you're using. Sometimes not only will those devices, but the software that you're using to import the video from those tapes within those devices will be imported in a proprietary format, which you have to use with certain software. But being able to find tools that will work for you, OpenShot, it didn't cost them a dime. I could say right now that if you buy Final Cut Pro or Adobe Premiere, you're talking like at least $300. For like the low to mid-range version, like the consumer version of that software. So to have great alternatives like this in Linux that do just work, because from my experience with video editing, a lot of it is just I need to cut this out and place these together in this order. You don't need to do a lot of color correction for some basic projects. But if you do, there are other tools available in Linux for that as well. So I'm very happy to hear that Rick had some positive experience with OpenShot. You were talking about OpenShot earlier in the show, Dor, I believe, in reference to this email. Have you used it yourself?
Honestly, no. I only became aware of it, I'd say, like 8 months ago or so. Okay. But I haven't had an actual chance to use it. I've only been doing very minimal video editing. So I was honestly afraid that it would be too advanced. And I did ask him, you know, did you just learn as you go? Did you go to a website? Did you read a book on how to use it? And he said, no, it was fairly intuitive. I have a little bit of experience video editing, and everything just made sense.
Yeah, when you do get the basics of video editing down, you can even sit inside one of those really advanced environments and just do the basic. You know, cut, paste, reorder. But it's nice to be able to have an environment where you can have those other options. And it's nice to learn in an environment like that, just go with the basics and then kind of spread out from there. So I'm glad that OpenShot worked for him. It'll be something I'll be trying in the near future with the project I'm working on, as well as Kitty and Live. I'll report back on that soon. But thank you very much, Rick, for writing in. As of that, after that, we're caught up in all our emails as far as I know. We will have some more on the next show. Thank you very, very much, guys, for listening. I really don't thank you guys enough for being an awesome just group of people who are really enjoying our content. Dor, speaking about those people, where can they find you if they want to contact you outside of the show?
The easiest is to just go to doordoorgeek.com, or you can go to podnuts.com and click on contact. Just shoot me an email. If you go to Door to Door Geek, I'm going to try to focus on that to be a more personal site, and Podnuts to be the more professional media site. So changes will come to that, but it will take a little bit of time because I don't want to break it like I did earlier today.
Well, that and your time is stretched thin, so it's on the hot burner. It's just going to take a while before it's cooked.
Right.
There you go. Well, thank you very much for joining me on this episode, Door. Of course, I'm Cody Cooper. You can email me at cody@podnets.com or hit me up on Google+. I will say that if you are a technician and if you would like to help out with the Podnets Network, Door has resurrected Podnets Daily and Podnets, either the basic Podnets show, and we also have some roundtable episodes coming up. If you are a tech and you would like to be on the show, please mail us at mail@podnets.com. We are booking guests currently for the next few months and have some slots to fill. Trust me, it'll be a worthwhile experience. My appearance on Podnets Daily was a blast, and I got to share some great things with listeners, get some good feedback. So it's all about making the community stronger, so why not reach out to our community members first? So please email us at mail@podnets.com if you are interested or able to help us in that endeavor. I appreciate it. If you are looking to send in a voicemail, please dial 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688, and leave us a voicemail for the next for the rest of us. We will definitely play it on the show. We are currently out, and so I'm going to stop playing one tonight. If you'd like to join us live, please watch Linux for the Rest of Us every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Of course, email us any of your questions, queries, or otherwise at podcast@linuxforrestofus.com. To support Podnuts, please use the following links. And remember, you don't pay any extra for using the links. Of course, the links are podnuts.com/Amazon, podnuts.com/Newegg, podnuts.com/eBay, podnuts.com/deals, and podnuts.com/clothing. And we got some new clothing coming down the pike very soon. So please check out all those links and help out the network with purchases that chances are you were already going to make anyway. Thank you very much for listening to this episode for Linux for the Rest of Us. And remember, Linux is not just for the rest of us, but it is for all of us. Good night.